Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
We are Scrambled Eggs, and welcome into your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast, everyone. Joe McCann, Phil Bush here with you with a little fancy intro to try to class things up.
Yeah, we got hot tracks all over the place up in here.
Yeah, just tried to just add a little something to the show, just so we got a little intro music now. So thanks to my coworker Karen for voicing that for us. And so we're looking forward to continuing this podcast and trying to make it bigger and better as we move forward. And Phil, one thing I want to start with, because as I was making the intro, I was thinking maybe for newer listeners, describing why we call ourselves Scrambled Eggs. I think it's an obscure reference, even if you are an avid Marquette basketball fan, to know where that came from. So I thought I would take a minute and describe why we call ourselves. Because people sometimes ask,
those young kids involved. They got to understand right where we're coming from.
Yeah, it is kind of an old reference, and when we first started this podcast, I admit I had to kind of look it up myself. We were looking for things, looking for ways to something to name this show
that would withstand coaching changes.
Exactly. At the time, we weren't associated with Crack Sidewalks. Otherwise, we probably would have just called it the Crack Sidewalks Podcast and just gone from there. But we were just kind of doing it on our own. And we were looking for something that was, that would be evergreen, because at the time, Buzz Williams was a coach. And you and I both had a gut feeling that he wouldn't be around forever. We didn't think it would go down the way it did. So we wanted something that would last, so Al McGuire things are always evergreen. And you kind of heard, that was Al McGuire's voice there that you heard in the intro, and that was basically him kind of describing the Scrambled Eggs concept. Al McGuire had some guys at the back of his bench that he would throw into a game every now and then just to mix things up. They weren't the most talented guys, but he would just kind of, if things weren't going well, if the starters were struggling, he would just sub in the last few guys on his bench. It was a Scrambled Eggs lineup, and that's what he kind of called it. And so that's kind of – we thought it was kind of a parallel of what we are. We're certainly not the most talented, not the best, but we give a good effort, and maybe we can be entertaining sometimes. So that's kind of why we call ourselves a Scrambled Eggs Podcast. A reference to Al McGuire, but also kind of describing what we are. Not the best.
Talentless hacks that try real hard.
Yeah, but we're part of the team, so that's where Scrambled Eggs came from. Today's show, we are going to talk a little bit about, Marquette didn't have a game this past week, but it did feel like they had a couple losses, considering how some teams on their schedule have played over the last week or so. We're going to take a look at how Marquette's resume is shaping up as they enter Big East play, and what effect Harry Froehling may have. I know he was a big, was a popular interview request over the last week. I know I saw a lot of local, whether it was newspapers or TV stations, were doing interviews with Harry Froehling as he was about to join the team. What kind of impact he's going to have. And we'll talk about Big East play as well, because we're probably not going to record a podcast over the Christmas holiday, so it may be a couple weeks before we do another one. So, Phil, first let's just talk about the past week. And like I said, Marquette did not play a game, but it felt like they lost a game just because the RPI hits they may have taken in the last week. Not that the RPI is the number one metric anymore for getting into the tournament, but it still is a metric. And when, LSU loses to Stephen F. Austin, Georgia loses to UMass, Vermont lost a game, they lost to St. Bonaventure, Eastern Illinois, and Chicago State had a couple losses. Chicago State got destroyed by
Northwestern. Drilled by Northwestern. They should have made that a secret scrimmage for themselves.
Yeah, I wish we could claim our secret scrimmage win over Northwestern, if that's what happened, as a strength of schedule. But, Phil, we kind of alluded to it in the last podcast. I think Marquette's strength of schedule, or really just their non-conference resume, when you take into account the strength of schedule and results, it's okay. It's not bad enough to keep them out of the tournament, but it's not good enough to get them into the tournament, I don't think. I think it's just kind of blah. It's just kind of in the middle. It's okay. It's not going to – I don't think it's going to have a huge swing one way or the other whether or not Marquette's in the tournament.
Yeah, I think if the Georgia game goes the other way, and we talked about it, then the non-conference schedule is above adequate. But I would say they've done nothing, and like you said, blah is probably the best way to describe it, but they've done nothing to hurt themselves, but they've done nothing to provide cushion for themselves either in Big East play. I mean, let's be honest. The non-conference schedule is adequate enough that if Marquette goes 10-8 in conference play, they're probably getting their ticket punched. If they finish less than 10-8, they're at serious risk of not making it. And that's, you know, and that's, I guess, what you want out of a non-conference schedule. I mean, they could have scheduled tougher, I suppose, but then they might have also racked up worse losses. So as long as they can win these last two, they did the bare minimum. They're wearing 17 pieces of flair, and that's it.
Yeah, some people choose to do more, and we encourage that. But you know, it's not Marquette's fault that Wisconsin is terrible this year. I mean, that's going to be just an average win, I think, when it's all said and done, because I think Wisconsin's going to have double digit losses in the Big Ten. And then that Chicago State game was one they had to do. It was like a old contract that they had to honor and just kind of get off the books. But you know, of Marquette's three losses, certainly two of them are fine, because you know, Purdue and Wichita State are both top 10 KenPom teams still, although Wichita State did have a loss this week. You know, they got beat by Oklahoma, who may have the National Player of the Year in Trae Young. That squad's pretty good. But
and then Purdue turned around and beat a conference cohort in Butler, and it looked sound and then a little less sound and then got sound again. So
they're back to being back. Right. Or something like that. But, you know, Purdue and Wichita State, those are losses you can live with, because I think once Wichita State gets all their players back and they get into the American Conference play, I think they're going to win a bunch of games. Almost certainly going to win that league, I would think. You know, they'll be in the, 25 win range, I think, before the season's over. So, that, you know, that's fine. The only game I wish Marquette had back was that Georgia loss. Not that it's a terrible loss, but if you could have gone 8-2 with your only two losses being Purdue and Wichita State, then that's fine. I think you're good. But I think the Georgia game is one Marquette would probably like back. But you know, no, you can't cry over the spilled milk now. So that, I mean, it is kind of what it is, and you'll just try to improve on it as you get into Big East play, assuming there's no disasters against Northern Illinois and American. We're not going to break those games down too much, because you know, those are two games. Without getting into too much hyperbole, those are, you know, in the season kind of losses if you don't take care of that. Because there is no realistic amount of wins in Big East play that Marquette could get that could make up for losing to Northern Illinois or American, two teams that are 250 or worse in KenPom. They're going to probably be in that 300 range RPI-wise. I say realistic wins, like, yeah, if you lose to Northern Illinois and then you go 18-0 in the Big East, that's just fine.
Yeah, you can make that, up for that way.
But, I mean, realistically, you're not going to make up for it. You know, Phil, you alluded to the goal Big East record there of, you know, and it's hard to tell, of course, but I just kind of have a gut feeling myself that I think I'm just slightly more pessimistic than you, but I think that 10-win range gets you in the discussion. I don't think it gets Marquette in. I think, yeah, I would agree with you that 9-9 or worse. I would say 9-9 with this resume is probably going to be out of the tournament, is just kind of my gut feeling on it. I think 10 wins would probably have you at least have you on the bubble-ish, and then 11 wins is, I think, the goal if you want to talk about being a tournament team. Because, again, not that Marquette has any terrible losses, but they really don't have any great wins either, is kind of my concern. When you look at the teams they've beaten, there's really not a great win. And again, I know it's not their fault that Wisconsin is bad, but you know, you can't really take that to the committee and say, well, Wisconsin was supposed to be better, so you should give us credit for that. I mean, this is, you can't sell that to the committee.
Yeah, that's true. But by the same token, I guess I'm operating from the premise, if you win 10 games in league play, you've had to have racked up at least, you know, a certain number of quality wins in conference play that 10 wins is going to do it. I mean, you've got five or six Big East teams that are, you know, top 30, top 40 teams, and depending on where you want to put Georgetown, which they might.
Thanks for ruining everything, by the way, Georgetown. You know, I was just so hopeful that Georgetown would beat Syracuse and enter Big East play with a farcical record of, unbeaten record, and say, hey, look, and maybe even get ranked. But no, they had to go out and blow a double-digit lead against Syracuse, so now they're dead to me.
How was Patrick Ewing to know that if you didn't put your players in a position to be challenged for, like, 2 months, that it would come back to bite you in the butt by losing a close game when you have a double-digit lead?
Imagine that. But, yeah, Georgetown got their comeuppance, and they're really going to get it when Big East play begins. Hopefully beginning in the first week, because Marquette, Georgetown is the second game of Big East play, so Marquette's going to have to take care of business there after they take care of business against Northern Illinois and American. But, yeah, I think you bring a good point, Phil, that there are enough good teams in the Big East that if you get 10 wins, inevitably you're going to have some good wins. You look at the KenPom rankings of the Big East teams. Villanova is 1. Seton Hall is 18. Xavier is 13. That's Marquette's first game. Butler, Providence, borderline top 50. St. John's is in the top 50. Creighton is 31. The only teams that are really low are DePaul and Georgetown. They're the only ones worse than 100. And Marquette is kind of, Marquette's hanging in there. They're in the 50s as well. So basically you've got Villanova and Xavier and Seton Hall kind of in the top 20. Then you've got a bunch of, and then you got Creighton in the 30s. Then you got three teams in the 50s with Providence, Marquette, and Butler, and St. John. So four teams in the 50s. And then you got DePaul and Georgetown bringing up the rear down there. So, who knows? I guess maybe it might depend who those 10 wins are against, like kind of how they fall. And you can't you definitely can't drop a game to Georgetown or DePaul. I mean, you have to get those. So you got to get 6 wins out of the other 14 games as I do quick math in my head. So,
right.
So of those 6 wins, I mean, you got to hopefully maybe knock off one of those top teams in there. So I guess you kind of break it down that way. You got to get some splits there with St. John's and Creighton and Butler and Providence, maybe sweep one of those, then you'd probably be in good shape. But if you could steal one against one of the top 3 teams, then maybe you might have something to take to the selection committee.
Yeah, well, and it's also going to depend on what goes on around. I mean, we're way too early prognostication, of course, but who are we, Joe Lenardi? But I will say that it really comes down to what happens around the teams around you. And that's why I'm saying a 10-8, I think, gives you a very reasonable shot to have a tournament bid, because there are going to be, the Big East is a solid conference. It's going to finish top 2, top 3 conference in the country again this season for sure, barring some sort of injury plague that goes through the Big East or something like that. So there's going to be high quality wins to be had within the Big East, and the Big Ten is clearly, other than Michigan State, seems kind of down. The ACC may be down. Everyone wanted to make the SEC like this is the year of the SEC. We might want to rethink that a little bit.
I think it depends on
what the bubble's like, right?
Yeah, I think the SEC has plenty of depth. They just don't have the powerhouse in Kentucky at the top this year. I think Kentucky's a little too young. I think it's one of those years where they have too many freshmen and don't have the depth. But, I think SEC has a ton of good teams. But SEC, according to KenPom, is ranked similarly to the Big East. Their ratings are very close. Big 12, for right now, is running away with the top spot. And there was a discussion that I saw some people saying that all 10 Big 12 teams right now have a good argument to be in the tournament. Now, inevitably, someone in that league, a couple teams in that league, are going to get beat up and finish, with a bunch of losses. But yeah, back to the main point is that the Big East is going to have plenty of quality wins available. The question is, how many is Marquette going to be able to get? Because I think you do need to get it to double digits if you want to consider yourself a tournament team. And the big question for Marquette is, I think the general feeling around the team right now is pretty good coming off back-to-back wins over Vermont and Wisconsin. But, this team still has some flaws. But the question is, will Harry Froehlich fix any of these flaws? As we kind of look ahead to him joining the team, of course, I'm sure, as all of you know now, the transfer from SMU, the Australian, he is now eligible to play now that final exams are over. So he will be suiting up this week, beginning on Monday against Northern Illinois, and then against American. So those will be 2 games to kind of get him in the rotation, see how he fits in, see how his minutes play out. What are you kind of expecting to see? What are you hoping to see from Harry Froehlich, Phil?
I would think what I'm hoping to see from him is that he's a slightly better than Matt Helt defensively. And at worst case, he's slightly better than Matt Helt. And that offensively, he can be a consistent third or fourth option on offense. So for me, the bar isn't that high for Froehlich to be able to contribute successfully to this team. Offensively, I want him to be a go-to option if, you know, Hauser, Howard, Rousey are either off or they're not, you know, or they're in foul trouble or whatever. He should be able to step up and be a third or fourth tier scorer, which takes some pressure off Sakar and pressure off, you know, Greg Elliott and Jamal Kane to score a lot if Froehlich's able to put some points up. And then defensively, I just want him to be able to kind of be a rim protector, be a little bit more, I guess I'll say, hardy down low when we get into some of these situations when we're playing the Hosses of Purdue and
fortunately, Purdue's not on the schedule again.
Well, but correct. Yeah, we're not playing those teams again. But
maybe for once, Angel Delgado will not have a dominant game against Marquette. I feel like his stats against Marquette are something like, you know, 40-30.
What are the odds we can keep him from having a double-double? It feels like no one can keep him from having a double-double.
Like if we could keep his double-double to 10-10, I would be satisfied. But, yeah, I think I'm kind of with you, Phil. I think most people are kind of on the same page as far as realistic expectations of Froehlich. I don't think any realistic fan is expecting him to come in and just totally change the team and be like an NBA player that totally takes it to another level. But he should be another piece that by taking a little bit of pressure off of everyone, whether it's Matt Helt defensively, whether it's maybe creating a little more space for the guards, because maybe he's playing in the middle and can bring the other team's big man out away from the basket a little bit, maybe that could be a way that he helps out. Maybe he is a guy who's a good passing big man. If he, you know, get those paint touches and get the ball in there and then get it back out and get it open to the shooters, get it out to open shooters. There are a lot of things that I'm curious what exactly he's going to bring. One thing that jumps out to me, Phil, is, you know, just the foul situation in the middle with Marquette, just to have five more fouls to work with. And guys like, you know, Matt Helt has had some struggles, but, you know, Theo John has certainly had his struggles with fouls. But maybe those guys don't have to worry about as much about their foul situations and maybe can loosen up and just, you know, play defense and know, hey, look, if they get in foul trouble, we got another guy who can come off the bench. You don't have to be too cautious and have to worry about fouling. And I think John is getting a little better with that as he's getting used to the speed of the college game. He certainly showed it in the Wisconsin game in my mind. But just having an extra body in the paint to take a little pressure off those guys and whoever is playing the best can be the guy who's in there in the final, you know, 5-10 minutes of a game. So, and I think, you know, Wojo did say after the Wisconsin game that Froehlich brings a skill set that really no one else on the team has. And if he does have that stretch four ability, the guy who can, you know, bring the defender out away from the basket, that he has to honor that jump shot, then I think that opens up more things for the guards, for guys like Howard and Rousey, who, you know, because of their size, they do struggle. They are going to struggle getting into the paint, although Howard has that floater that has just made his two-point percentage one of the best in the country, especially for a guard. But, you know, it just makes it that much easier for those guys to get into the paint and create for others if a guy like Froehlich is drawing the defender away from the basket. So that's kind of one aspect on the offensive end I'm looking for from Froehlich.
Yeah, so what do you think the lineup looks like? So when Froehlich's in, it sounds like you think he's going to be playing the four mostly. So when he's in, what do you think the lineup is around him typically?
Yeah, that's a good question because, you know, certainly Sakar has played pretty well, and they've gotten good minutes from Elliott and Kane, but I think for the most part, I think your typical lineup is going to be Rousey, Howard, Hauser at the three, and then Froehlich and Helt. But then you have that flexibility if you want to put Froehlich in the middle and put Hauser at the four, then you can bring those other guys in at the three. And then if you know, if Rousey is in foul trouble or Howard's in foul trouble or one of them is struggling for whatever reason, then you can then you know you have the options of Elliott and Sakaar at the two. But yeah, I think some of these guys do move down a slot because of Froehling, because there's just not much, there's not as much need for those guys to play in the middle, particularly Hauser. I think Hauser would very rarely play in the middle now, unless the other guys are just totally ineffective or in foul trouble or whatever. I think Hauser's minutes are going to be divided between the three and the four now over the next few games and over the rest of the season. And so that's kind of what I'm expecting. And so if that means more, a little more Hauser on the perimeter, a few more open looks from three, I'm all for that. I mean, as we all know, he's as good a three-point shooter as anybody on the team, and Marquette's one of the best three-point shooting teams in the country. I mean, as of right now, Hauser does have the best three-point percentage on the team at 47%, with Howard at 41%, although it seems like it's at 91% sometimes.
Yeah, and, last couple of weeks have been on tear.
And Rousey's at 43%. So, but yeah, if that means Hauser's able to get more looks from the perimeter, that's great. But you know, Hauser doesn't have to, you know, be one-dimensional either. I mean, he can, you know, he's as good as an inside-out player as really anybody, in the Big East, in my mind. I mean, he's certainly one of them. So I'm interested to see how it affects Hauser and if he's going to be able to maybe contribute a little more offensively, just because he's going to be on the perimeter maybe a little bit more if when Froehling and Helt are both in there, and maybe he can get a few more looks from three.
Yeah, it is going to be an interesting to see how the lineup shapes up, because I think defensively, Froehling probably makes the most sense playing the five, though, you know, when Helt's in there, I think Froehling probably plays the four defensively. But on the offensive end, it seems like Froehling is much more likely to be the four than he is to be the five. So it'll be interesting to see how those matchups or how those pairs go. Like, do you play Froehling and Helt together? Do you play Froehling and Theo together? Are they not, you know, is there some combination or is it Froehling and Hauser together? I would think that there'd be, if Froehling and Hauser play together, it's going to be because either Theo or Helt are going to play. I don't think you have a scenario where you have Froehling at the five and Hauser at the four, unless there's foul trouble going on or something like that. But
yeah, I don't know, because, you know, it's not like, you know, Matt Helt's going to play 35 minutes a night. So I think there are going to be plenty of times where I think you might see Froehling at the five and Hauser at the four. I think those guys are going to be interchangeable, and it hopefully means fresher legs at the end of the game, because I don't think anybody's going to necessarily have to play 35, 40 minutes because Marquette, you know, you're not going to be down to seven or eight guys now like you were in some games in the non-conference schedule. But I think they're just going to mix and match, and who knows, maybe for one reason or another, reasons we really haven't touched on and that are thought about, that maybe some of the combinations don't work at all. If maybe, you know, like, I don't know, if Froehling doesn't have the outside game that we assume he has, maybe it doesn't make sense to play him and Helt together. Maybe they're going to divide up the minutes at the five. But I think from everything we understand, Froehling does have that stretch four ability. So I think he would play a little bit more at the four with Matt Helt, and I think John and Helt would split a lot of time at the five, and maybe you will see Froehling take a few minutes at the five as well. But yeah, the one thing I am kind of anticipating is that we will hardly see any of Sam Hauser at the five, just because I think he can do a lot of damage at other spots, and there are other guys who can, you know, that have the ability to play that position well, both offensively and defensively now.
Yep, I completely agree.
So why don't we, like, I think we've broken down Froehling enough, considering we haven't actually seen him play yet. Why don't we just maybe break down the Big East a little bit, now that, you know, we are 10 games in for the most part. Most teams have played about 10 games at this point. The one thing we know is that Villanova is a beast. You know, Villanova is the number one team in the country, both in the AP rankings and in KenPom and most people's power rankings. Villanova, to me, Phil, is just a terrifying team. I don't know how, you know, I think some people have been discussing, are they going to relinquish the number one spot in the rankings? You know, not saying that they can necessarily go undefeated, but when they do take a loss, it may be a forgivable loss and they may stay near the top, or somebody else loses the same week. This Villanova team is pretty darn scary. I mean, they got two of the most two of the top four most efficient players in the country per Ken Pom's Player of the Year rankings in Bridges and Brunson. This is just a team. I know Marquette upset them last year, and I'd love to see it again, but this Villanova team is not a team I am looking forward to playing.
No, it's the team presents matchup nightmares for everyone, and you know, they may be better this year than they were last year. It's going to be a tough if Villanova loses more than three games in Big East play, I would be shocked.
Yeah, I would too. I think that's kind of the number I'm kind of looking at for them loss wise, two or three. I certainly don't expect them to go undefeated in the Big East just because it's such a bear of a league. You're inevitably going to drop one here, but you know how Ken Pom, those of you who are familiar with Ken Pom, does the game by game predictions. If you go game by game, he does have Villanova winning every game the rest of the way. But as far as his projected record, he does have them losing three games. What's that mean if they have some predicted? Well, the projected record kind of acknowledges that there are some variables, especially in some of the 50-50 games, and upsets happen is basically what that's saying. So he's saying, yeah, maybe two, three losses. They only have one non-conference game left. That's Hofstra. That's one they should win quite comfortably. But yeah, you go to Xavier, that's a game they could lose. You go to Providence, that's a game you could lose. And who would have thought they would have come to Milwaukee last year and lost a game? Upsets happen. But I'm kind of you, Phil. I think Villanova will win this league relatively comfortably. You know, maybe by two games by the time it's all said and done, because I think the other teams will probably get tripped up and have in the range of four or five losses, even the best teams in the league like Xavier and Seton Hall, who are certainly really good this year. But Villanova certainly has national championship potential, and really they're not the only team that I think is final four good in the league. But if you're going to put your chips on one Big East team to make a run to the final four, certainly you would take them. But Xavier has a top five offense right now. Their defense is pretty good. Seton Hall's offense and defense are both similarly ranked around 20-25 in the country. So Seton Hall is as good as they had hoped they would be. I think they were kind of a sexy pick to be a Final Four team at the beginning of the year, kind of the sleeper Final Four pick for a lot of teams, maybe even a dark horse to win the Big East in some people's mind. I wouldn't go that far with them, but I certainly think they're really, really good. So I think there's a clear, in my mind, I think there's a clear top three in this league. Well, even better speaking, a clear top one, and then a clear two teams that could challenge them. I think Xavier and Seton Hall are the teams that if somehow Villanova does not win the Big East, Xavier and Seton Hall would be my next guesses. But I think it's probably going to be those two battling it out for second and third in the league. And then I think it gets interesting after that, Phil. I think that's where Marquette comes into discussion. When you talk about Creighton, St. John's, Butler, Providence, I think then it could be a lot of parity between 4 and 8 in this conference.
Yeah, I think that analysis was right. I think Villanova is the clear number one, and then Xavier and Seton Hall are kind of nipping at their heels. So the top three are pretty clear cut. I think the bottom, I don't care what their record says, I still think the bottom two are pretty clear to me in terms of Georgetown and DePaul. You could maybe even make the argument that St. John's, they've been scrappy in non-conference, but St. John's, until they prove it in league play, I'm not going to believe it.
St. John's is always that team everyone says every year is on the cusp of breaking out, aren't they? Like every year, and I think that's because I think there are certainly a lot of Big East writers in New York who kind of get that. Like, I don't know, maybe they catch the fever a little bit and maybe they're around the program a lot and think they're close. But to me, St. John's is always that team everyone says, oh, this is the year. They're really close. And then they're always kind of like, 6th, 7th in the Big East, 8th in the Big East year after year. So, again, maybe this is the year, but I'm kind of with you. I want to see it from St. John's. I want to see them, get some really quality wins, go out and beat Xavier and beat Seton Hall or beat – or challenge Villanova or things like that. But, yeah, I want to see it from St. John's before I say they're a tournament team.
Right, exactly. So I think it's probably Georgetown, DePaul, St. John's, somewhere in that 8, 9, 10 range. And then, and you can make the argument with Marquette's defense. They're not a great team, but when you've got a top-20 offense, you can do some things.
Make, Yeah, I wouldn't make Marquette immune from being in that eighth place discussion.
Oh, I would not either, right? I mean, yeah, they could certainly fall.
If the defense isn't there, then eighth place is very, very realistic for Marquette, just because the other teams in the league are pretty good. And let me look at the defensive numbers. Yeah, no one defensively is even as close to as lowly rated. Their adjusted defensive efficiency is 164 right now. The next closest is Georgetown at 114. DePaul's at 93, and everyone else is 60 or better. So there's quite a gap defensively. So basically, when you're talking about being in the range of the decent teams in the league, other teams projected to be in the top seven, Marquette's about 100 spots back of all of them. Now, see, that's concerning when you put it in that kind of range. Now, on the flip side, now if you want to be positive, Marquette's offense is ranked 13th in adjusted offensive efficiency. So that ranks them third in the Big East, behind only Villanova, who's 2, and Xavier, who's 4. They're slightly ahead of Creighton at 17 and Seton Hall at 19. So, again, this is kind of the thing we always knew about Marquette, right, even coming into the year, that their offense is going to keep them in games. If they're going to win big games, it's because they're shooting well. If they lose games, it's going to be because the defense played poorly. That was kind of the Evergreen podcast we joked about
a couple shows ago. Exactly. It hasn't changed. Maybe Froehling helps a little bit, but I still don't think they get to a top 100 defense, even with Froehling being
good. Yeah, that's asking a lot. But, yeah, who knows? Maybe it's just slight improvements, right? Maybe just every week, maybe you go up a little bit, and maybe you find yourself in the top, I don't know, 130 by the end of the year, which certainly isn't great, but hey, maybe if you're in the top third of college basketball, maybe you could just take that as a small victory if you're Marquette, and if your offense can stay in that top 10-15 range in the country, you can steal enough wins in Big East play. I was looking over the resumes of these teams while you were talking, Phil. One of the bad losses that we overlooked, Seton Hall going out and losing to Rutgers this week.
Yeah, they got rack attacked. That's not good.
I'm going to forgive that one and still say Seton Hall's a good team because, they have some nice wins over Vanderbilt, Texas Tech, Louisville. They beat VCU just like Marquette did. They beat Indiana. So Seton Hall, they're going to be fine, but that's a stinker of a loss on their resume that you didn't want to have. But yeah, but overall, Phil, I think for me, just if I had to power rank the Big East, that's kind of what I would look. I'd say Marquette's not going to finish in the top three. I think that's too high of a hill to climb, but I wouldn't guess they're going to finish fourth either. I think that's a little high, but I think they're going to be in the range where they can compete with whoever is finishing fourth, whether that's Creighton or Butler or St. John's or Providence. They're going to be in the mix, and I think those teams could be jumbled up kind of all season long. But that's kind of where I rank Marquette. A good distance back at the top three just because the defense is just nowhere near what it needs to be if you're going to compete with those top three teams. But the offense is good enough that, that when you get to that fourth team, those are teams when Marquette plays them, particularly at home. I'm saying, this is a game Marquette could win.
Yeah, I'm staying with my prediction. I think Marquette finishes fourth or fifth in the Big East.
You are the optimistic one.
Yeah, I think that offense is great, good to great, and I think the defense can be brought along a little bit. The team's getting longer now. It's got more depth. They've got multiple scoring options potentially. I mean we'll see. Well, I mean it could be a total flop. Froehling may get 6 minutes against American and Northern Illinois, and I've got to come back and eat crow the next time we pod. But, I think this team could be good. I also think some of the Big East teams may struggle when it comes into conference play. Who knows? It'll be up for grabs, I think. I definitely agree with you. I think it's going to be Marquette. And it seems like we talk about this pretty much every year for the last 4 years, or basically since we've been potting, that Marquette could finish anywhere from fourth to eighth.
I think that's kind of changing. I think basically since the second year of Wojo, really, that's kind of where we've been talking about. The first year they were, just understandably one of the worst teams in the conference, just because they just they were just so thin that year in the first year of the rebuild. But every year since, it's kind of like, well, if things go great, they could finish fourth. But if they go poorly, they could finish eighth. And in the end, the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. Maybe they will finish fifth or sixth. And if they finish fifth or sixth in the Big East, then you're going to kind of be in that discussion. Because when you're a top three conference, according to all the metrics, you're probably going to get more than half of your teams in. So, at least half, maybe more. So I think that's kind of the goal realistically every year for the Big East, is to get about six teams in, because I think that's considered a really good showing for the conference. So if you can be that sixth team out of the Big East, then I think you're in good shape. And maybe one year you get lucky and get seven in, but I think after that, I think is unrealistic. The one thing that does concern me a little bit, Phil, if you look at the KenPom projections, and this is kind of, I think when we went game by game at the beginning of the season, I think our predictions were pretty similar. It could potentially be a very rough start for Marquette in Big East play. So basically, let's just get everyone calm now. Don't hit the panic alarm if Marquette starts 1-4 in the Big East, because it could happen and they could still be okay. Because when you talk about Xavier at home, again, that's one of those top three teams that I'm not sure Marquette can beat just yet. I want to get a good look at Froehlich before I can predict beating a team like Xavier. Then you're going on the road to Providence. Certainly not going to be easy going there. Then you go to Villanova, almost guaranteed loss. And then you get Seton Hall at home, which is basically a 50-50 game. KenPom has it as a loss currently, but that's a game that, again, when you're talking about Seton Hall, and who knows if Froehlich brings an element to the middle that maybe we haven't really anticipated, maybe that's a game you could steal. And then you get Butler on the road. Tough place to go, of course, going to Hinkle. But I'm not sure this is the best Butler team we've seen over the last few years. I think they're still competitive. And I think they might be a tournament team. But, I don't know if I would say that's a guaranteed loss going to Hinkle, though. But it's certainly not going to be an easy win going there, because, Butler's just got a culture that's kind of tough to match. But when you're going up against guys, the experience that they have, like with Martin, and Baldwin's a really good player. So potentially starting 1-4, 1-5 in the Big East. So if that happens, don't get too alarmed. Maybe if it gets to 1-5, you could really start getting a little nervous. But if it starts, say, 1-.
Well, I was just going to say, that stretch of four games, Providence, Villanova, Seton Hall, Butler, I think at a minimum, you gotta win one. Like, if you're going to finish 10-8, you have to win at least one of those. Maybe
so.
Even two, depending on, because there's a couple of the schedule, basically the way the schedule is, tough, relatively okay, super tough, relatively okay, tough, and then finish probably, when you finish against Creighton, St. John's, DePaul, Georgetown, Creighton. Yes, Creighton's good, but you should be racking up some wins there late in the conference season. So it really comes down to, you got to steal a couple of wins in those tough sections if Marquette's going to be competitive. And if they're going to finish fourth or fifth, they're going to have to, they're going to have to win probably at least, some combination of, I would say, Providence, Seton Hall, and Butler. They may need to win two out of three of those.
Yeah, that would agree. If they're going to finish as high as fourth, yeah, I think they got to go 3-3 in this opening stretch. Because, obviously you have to beat Georgetown. Georgetown's just a game that you have to win. Because Georgetown and DePaul, if the Big East is going to get seven teams in the tournament, they're going to need Georgetown and DePaul to take their beatings and finish down there in the basement. But if you are a hopeful tournament team out of the Big East, you can't lose to Georgetown or DePaul, because those are losses that are going to be tough to recover from. Losing the first one to Xavier would be tough because it's a home game, but it's a forgivable loss. I know you don't like to take moral victories, especially when you're trying to scrap in the Big East and try to finish in the top four or whatever. But Xavier's one of the top teams. That's a game you can understand losing. Georgetown, you got to beat them in that second game. You look at, the Seton Hall game is projected to be pretty close. And if Butler is down slightly, maybe you could go on the road and get a really good win in that game on January 12th. And then you get DePaul at home, which is a game, obviously, you have to win that one. And then the toughest stretch of the season comes up after that, when you have at Xavier and then Villanova at home. So that's the like that back to back is going to be one of the toughest parts. But yeah, you mentioned there, Phil, the final month of the season or final five, six games, there will be opportunities to get a lot of wins down the stretch. So if Marquette, say, mid February is below 500 in Big East play, there will be a lot of opportunities down the stretch to get back to 500 and then get over 500 before the Big East tournament. So there's always hope. So if Marquette starts a little rough, Big East play starts 2-4, don't panic just yet. There are some really, there are some really tough games early on. I know every game's tough, but the more favorable matchups, the home games against some of the middle teams, they're coming up a little bit later. So there's still plenty of time in this Big East schedule if the first few games don't go so well.
Right. So we don't want to have anyone panicking, but we'll see what Froehling holds. If Froehling has, I don't want to say he's the key, because we specifically talked him down as, he's not some white knight riding in to save the season or anything like that. But he is the key.
But if
right?
he wants to be, that'd be great.
Right, sure. If he wants to step up and take that role, that's fine. But if he can eat some minutes, help the defense get a little bit better, get another option for scoring. If Froehling, we didn't talk about it, he can help Sakar be a better, be a better scoring option, right? Because Sakar has a tendency to get down in the lane under the basket to try and score. Froehling gives him an option maybe that Helt doesn't to dump it off to or at least keep Sakar from being doubled as he's driving the lane, that sort of thing. So there's all sorts of things. It's the little pieces that the kind of incremental shifts that helps the team get better. So if Froehling can meet a relatively average bar, I think this team has the ability to surprise some teams. Because I would say I would be a lot less optimistic on this team if Froehling wasn't in the picture at all, right? If they were rolling into the conference season with the team they had now minus Froehling, I think their best shot is probably 9-9. So Froehling's got to bring something to the table to help this team be better.
Yeah, and I think you kind of just hit it there. I mean, we don't need him to be a savior. Just he needs to fill a role, right? He just a small, not necessarily a small role, but it could be just a fair sized role, like kind of like Sakar fills a role, Greg Elliott has a role, and if Harry Froehling can assume a role like that in the front court, where maybe he adds a little bit of defense, adds a little bit of scoring, that takes a little pressure off of everybody else, makes the team a little bit better, maybe play a little more efficiently, your KenPom numbers go up, you get a couple more wins, your RPI goes up, all the metrics go up just a little bit, and maybe you're just a little bit more appealing team when it gets down to the end of the season and it's time to pick the tournament teams. I think most people nationwide, Phil, probably look at Marquette, probably not a tournament team, if we're being honest. I don't think anyone really is discussing Marquette as a tournament team right now, and I don't think there's any reason to be upset about that. I don't think there's been a whole lot on the resume to say, yeah, this is a tournament team, this is a team that can be there. But a lot could change over the next 2 months, and so we'll see how many wins are you able to get, if Froehling changes the perspective a little bit, if you get in a Big East play, and if you upset a team like Villanova. Hey, it's happened before. If you take down a team like Xavier, if you beat a team like Seton Hall, then maybe people start taking notice of you a little bit. So everybody plays their part. Everybody plays a little bit of a role. Who knows? We'll see where this team, how many chips they have when the season kind of wraps up. So I'm looking forward to it. As always, we look forward to Big East play, because you know it's going to be a grind. It's going to be a bear. It's going to be exciting every night. So I can't wait to see what this team has. We'll get a little sampling of what the team looks like this week against Northern Illinois and American. Hopefully 2 wins there, and then if I'm making a prediction, Phil, I'm going to say 1-1 next week after Christmas with Xavier home loss. I just don't have a strong feeling that they could beat Xavier just yet. You got to beat Georgetown, so I'll say a win over Georgetown on the 30th.
Yeah, I think the next 4 games they go 3-1. I would actually say if they beat Xavier at home, I could see them let down against Georgetown. But I feel comfortable. So what I'm saying is I feel comfortable that 3-1 after by the time we pot again is probably realistic and quite frankly necessary. So
expected, really.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, well, so, yeah, the next time we pod will probably be after Christmas. Probably won't be doing one next weekend. So, everyone, enjoy your Christmas holiday. Merry Christmas. As always, we thank you for listening here on Scrambled Eggs. You can hit us up on Twitter. I am Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOF23. Hit up Crack Sidewalks as the team handle. You can leave your comments on cracksidewalks.com. That's where we post the podcast. Please remember to subscribe if you haven't done that on iTunes. You can rate us and review us there. And, of course, we have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page as well. I post a podcast there, so be sure to like us on there if Facebook is your social media weapon of choice. Phil, have a Merry Christmas. And, hey, I guess we'll talk to you after the holidays. And hopefully Marquette will be 2-0 in Big East play next time we speak.
Oh, that would be a wonderful Christmas present. I would welcome opening that one.
That's what I want in my stockings. Hope you guys get it, too. Until next time, everyone, seashells and balloons.